Scientists in California are reporting that over the past century, many animals and birds in Yosemite National Park have migrated up the mountainsides. The reason? They're looking for cooler temperatures. And as the planet gets warmer, more and more species may struggle with the same choice, to migrate or die. NPR's Dan Charles reports.
The oldest detailed records of wildlife in Yosemite National Park are at the Museum of Vertebrate Zoology at the University of California, Berkeley. Craig Moritz is the director.
The Museum of Vertebrate Zoology is really unusual for an academic institution in that it has a soul and a sense of purpose.
The old notebooks, bound into blue volumes and shelved in glass-fronted bookcases, are filled with notes from field expeditions. Some of the oldest and most detailed were collected by the museum's first director, Joseph Grinnell, in Yosemite. Grinnell wrote in 1910 that these notes would be most valuable 100 years later, when other scientists might want to know what's changed.
So in 1910, Grinnell set the table and basically told us what to do, and that is to come back in a century.
Craig Moritz and his colleagues did go back recently. They found the same kinds of mice, squirrels, and lizards that Grinnell had seen, but they found many of them in different places. Most had moved to higher elevations.
We've got one species that's moved a kilometer upwards from the east side over the Sierra Crest to colonize high elevations on the west side. That's very dramatic change. This is not subtle stuff we're talking about.
The reason, Moritz says, is that Yosemite doesn't get as cold anymore. According to weather records, the average monthly low temperature has increased by about 6 degrees Fahrenheit over the past century. That's a local change, but it's an example of what's likely to happen as global temperatures increase.
We didn't set out to look for an effect of climate change. It just hit us right between the eyes when we started looking at the data.
Their study appears in this week's issue of the journal Science. And right next to it in the magazine, there's a paper about the potential effects of global warming on wildlife in the tropics. Robert Colwell from the University of Connecticut studied plants and insects in the valleys and mountains of Costa Rica and found that half of them stay within a fairly narrow range of temperatures. If the Earth warms up as predicted, they'll probably have to move. But species in the tropics, he says, have a particular problem.
It's a very long ways to somewhere that's cooler.
Temperatures in the tropics are the same across thousands of miles from Mexico City to Sao Paulo, Brazil.
The point is that the only escape route, if they have to move, the only escape route is basically uphill.
Just as they did in Yosemite. Many probably will have to climb more than 2,000 feet, Colwell says, into entirely new areas. Some may not be able to make the leap. He also says it's not clear how many species will remain behind in the hottest areas, the tropical lowlands. Some biologists are optimistic. They say creatures in the tropical lowlands won't mind if it gets hotter. They'll stay put. But Colwell isn't so sure.
There's no evidence whatsoever that they're able to tolerate any amount of more heat. And I ask, why should they be an exception? Why should they not be adapted to their current climate?
So as thousands of tropical species move uphill, the rich diversity of life in the lowlands could start to disappear. Dan Charles, NPR News, Washington.
Everybody duck! It's a swarming mass of bees! They're hurtling overhead, going from their old hive to, well, where are they going? And how do they all know which way to go? It's this week's Science Out of the Box. It turns out, when a swarm of bees moves to a new home, less than 5% of them actually know where they're going. So why don't the rest get lost? Thomas Seely is a sociobiologist and bee expert at Cornell University. Professor Seely, how do they do it?
Well, the short answer is that small minority, that less than 5% that are informed, point the way visually by streaking through the top of the swarm and providing guidance to the rest of them that look up and can see which direction the streakers are moving.
How did you figure that out?
Well, I worked with two engineering colleagues friends of mine at Ohio State, Kevin Schultz and Kevin Passano, and they were really the key people in this, because this question of how a swarm guides itself has been around for centuries. And I was talking with Kevin Passano about it, and he said, well, new digital video technology combined with some new software would enable us to actually track individual bees in this cloud of a swarm of flying bees. The thing is quite large. It's about the size of a school bus.
It's tens of thousands of bees, right?
Correct. Typically about between 10 and 20,000 bees.
So I understand you had to go to an island with no trees with holes in them to do this. Tell me why.
Well, to make this whole set of observations work, a critical thing is you need to have that swarm fly directly over your camera. And normally you can't control where a swarm of bees goes. The swarm is sitting there. They choose a home site. Normally it would be in a forest setting. They'd fly to a hollow tree, and you'd have no idea where they're going. On this island, we could rig it up so that we'd set the swarm up in one place. We'd put a nest box, their new home, in another, and then we could control the line of flight that they'd move along.
Okay, let me just make sure I can picture this. The bees start out, and the streaker bees are super fast. They fly up high, and they go in a straight line from the old hive to the new one.
Right, but they don't keep flying. They'll just shoot or streak through the swarm cloud from the back until they get to the front of the swarm cloud, and then somehow it looks like they work their way back. We're not sure quite how they do that, whether they fly below the cloud or to the sides, and then they'll shoot through again.
And the other bees watch them and follow them by sight?
Evidently. It's hard to see how else they would do it other than by sight.
So this solves a centuries-old mystery, huh?
Well, it's very strong support for the streaker bee hypothesis.
And what happens now?
Well, one of the things we would like to know now is, who are these scout bees, these informed bees? We know they're the ones that chose the new home, but what is special about that 5% or so of the bees?
So how do those scouts, how do that 5%, how do they decide on the new site?
It's a democracy. Different scouts find different locations, and they basically have a kind of race among themselves over who can convince enough other individuals first to get to one of these sites. And the best site wins, because the bees are very honest. If a scout finds an excellent site, she will produce very long dances advertising her site. If she finds a poor site, she'll perform weak dances advertising her site. So the buildup occurs most strongly at the best site.
Thomas Seeley is a sociobiologist and bee expert at Cornell University. He's one of the authors of a new study on streaker bees, just out in the Journal of Experimental Biology. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.